And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hey folks, welcome into On Waveland. This podcast is brought to you by DirecTV Stream. Get your TV together with the best of live and on demand. Learn more at directtv.com. On to Waveland, also presented by Topps. Check out Topps Project 70, celebrating 70 years of Topps baseball cards. I am Brett Taylor, joined by Sahadev Sharma and Patrick Mooney. And we're here to talk, well, it is the postseason for us in our Cubs coverage and for the Cubs. But you have to like say it that way to make sure that the hyphen is in there, because it is not the postseason for the Cubs. They are not involved in the postseason. They are just in their postseason period. And so we will use this as an opportunity to kind of put a little bow on the season that was for the Cubs, and then talk a little bit about our perspectives on the postseason, no hyphen there. And that's probably where we'll leave it on this. What I was thinking about as I was introing, and this is so unfair to do to you guys, but again, it's like the one perk of being the sort of pseudo host is that I get to tee stuff up sometimes without having specifically prepped you. So then, and then you guys have to dance, you have to tap dance while I'm able to be like, oh, I know what I'm going to say. So, okay, season is wrapped. We obviously spoke at length about the season as it was happening, so I don't know how much we need to actually unpack of the nitty gritty, but what I have found funny in the aftermath of the season is sort of reflecting on the holy crap, that was this year stuff. And that's quite a bounty for a team that set the record for using the most players ever, a whopping 69 players this year for the Cubs. And I wondered if you guys had any things now at the end of the season that you were thinking back and you're like, holy crap, that was earlier this year, wasn't it? Anything sparking to your mind?
Not, yeah, you've definitely put me on the spot here.
Bam, gotcha, nailed you.
I got one because I saw some of those like season recap video on Twitter and the Javi running back and forth. But mostly because it was like an actual moment of like joy around this team and like happiness and excitement and optimism. And that just felt like a totally foreign experience to what the last several months of the season were. And even that time period, you know, I think that was May. It was kind of before they really took off. I mean, just, yeah, you know, it was the first, I think, road trip of the year. And like, we were asking Jed about the trade deadline. Like that was just how like warped our sense of time was this year.
Yeah. Well, if we're talking about positive moments, I think the best moment for me.
Sorry, wait, did you immediately assumed that I was asking for like what's a horrifying moment that you remember from earlier this year?
Yeah, pretty much.
Like, There's too many.
Well, I mean the Rizzo at bat at full capacity was one of the coolest moments of the season. That the what was it 14 pitches or whatever it was in the homer, and I mean it was just such a fun moment, and I think everybody was kind of, I think they swept the Cardinals that weekend. That was probably the last. I know the combined no hitter was a great moment, but I don't know, combined no hitters aren't as exciting to me as they are to some, but that moment was one of the last really great moments for this group, I think. And it seemed like something kind of cool and fun was going to happen at that point. Like when he did that, it was like, ooh, is this team like kind of good? You started to wonder, like maybe if they add some pitching at the deadline, huh, this team is kind of starting to figure things out. And then it all just went to hell.
Yeah.
Well, let me mention on that vein, because I think that was, I think most people upon reflection would agree that that was sort of like the high point of the season, that game specifically. It was the fully reopened Wrigley Field. It was the Cardinals. It was back when the game outcomes still mattered in the standings for the Cubs. And then, yeah, that the Cubs were down one and Rizzo battles 14 pitches, homering. It was, I think, the longest at bat of his career. And to tie the game, Cubs go on to win. I mean, that was pretty fantastic. And it also does feel like a lot of these things very foreign to be like, oh, yeah, that was this year. You remember the sweep of the Padres at Wrigley that was finished off by arguably the best Craig Kimbrell had ever looked in a Cubs uniform. I mean, like, I feel like that was a real specific inning where I was like, wow, I'm going to remember this because he looks freaking unbelievable. And indeed he did. He looked sufficiently unbelievable that the White Sox stepped up to trade for him a month later or 2 months later. And, that's what most people will remember about the season. Of course, is it will be remembered as the year that the roster was finally taken apart. I want to add one more before we sort of transition to some other closing thoughts on the season. So one bookmarking endpoint type of thing that I loved this year was Jason Adam coming back to the big league roster and looking incredible, by the way. So good that, like, I never thought he was going to get back to a point where I'm like, boy, they should keep him on the 40-man roster all offseason. I kind of think it now, which I'm sort of blown away at myself that I think that. But what's amazing is it was this year that he was in the bullpen to start the year, unable to command anything in the zone, getting absolutely blown up, him and Brandon Workman together, supposed to be some of the back-end guys back in April, getting so blown up.
Brandon Workman, there's something.
Yes. See, there you go. I tell you, those lists of the 69 names who've played for the Cubs this year, it is, you're like, oh my God, Ildemaro Vargas did play for the Cubs this year. Holy crap. Yeah. I mean, how long ago does it seem that Eric Sogard was on the Cubs, right? That wasn't that long ago.
Yeah.
That really wasn't that long ago, but it feels like aeons ago. So anyway, but yeah, Jason Adam, big highlight. Dude, he went down to Iowa and obviously he had the gruesome injury during batting practice. His ankle went through his skin, and yet 2 months later, he's back with the big league team and dominating at the end. And that's another nice story. Last call for any of those type of things before sort of general wrap up season commentary about the on-field performance.
Well, I did just talk to Jason Adam, and I had to, like, check with him, and I was like, wait, when was it that you kind of broke in with the team and had that rally guy? Because I'd, like, suddenly forgotten. I was like, how long have you been with the team? And it was just last year that he had, like, that he looked so nasty, and he kind of figured things out, and then he came into this year. Because, I mean, Tommy Hotovy was really high on him. I'm sure now that he's looking great again, he feels similarly, but he was super high on him and believed that he could be one of the better relievers in the game. And then he just, oof, was he a mess. And I think there'll be more. I'll write more about it. But I think he feels that as awful as that injury was, like the perspective that it brought him and the reset that it may have given him, because he felt he was really out of whack mechanically early on in the year. Obviously, the results showed something was wrong. But in the long run, he hopes that as gruesome as that injury was, he can become a better pitcher. So definitely a pretty cool story. I agree with you, Brett. I didn't expect to ever see him again. And to see him, not only see him, but to see him dominate like that. That was a nice story. A nice little story to end the season there.
Brett, we had a similar experience this weekend in St. Louis, kind of standing in the dugout, waiting for Ross or whoever to come out before one of the final games. And it was kind of the, like, I will remember you montage of trying to think through players. And I think Pedro Strop was one that everyone was like, oh, that's right.
Holy crap.
Because
yes.
Obviously Pedro Strop has a huge, made a huge impact on the franchise. Everyone remembers him and his personality, but, like, yeah, he did pop up for a couple of games. I want to say in April, maybe.
Milwaukee, I think.
Yeah, they thought they might have had a COVID outbreak. But yes, Pedro Strop, a 2021 Forever Cub.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
So obviously the season ends for the Cubs. Winning record in October. You know, Cubs took 2-3 from the Cardinals, so they are back to being a winning October baseball team. I have to give shouts and love to the Cubs and the Twins for structuring and coordinating their wins and losses at the end of the year, such that by late Friday of that series, it could only end one way, with the Cubs, you know, winding up with the 7 pick and the Twins winding up with 8. So I was therefore able to completely guilt-free just be excited about wanting to see the Cubs beat the Cardinals this weekend. And of course, the finale on Sunday was sort of a bit of a bogus, you know, multi-rain game where it was sort of like, okay, never mind. Like, any of the excitement you might have had to be like, this is the final game, maybe there'll be some crazy fun drama late just to leave us with something. And it's like, no, it's kind of going to rain on and off. And then they're going to decide, you know what? We're just done. We're just done with this game.
Let's just end this thing.
let's just end. But I think that it was, if you want to try to check off some storylines from that series, you know, another nice game for Frank Schwindel to wrap things up. And he, of course, was just named the Rookie of the Month again in the National League 2 months in a row for him. And I think that he probably, not by virtue of just this one series, but I think he is pretty much sewn up, as we've discussed many times, even in spite of any incredulity about what he was doing. I think he's pretty locked into a roster spot next year and going to get those regular starting appearances either at first base or DH early on. As for other things that happened late that are going to inform the offseason or impact any planning, it's hard to say. You know, there's always that truism about not taking too much away from September results, you know, not letting it convince you too much about what you're going to do. But a little part of me is noticing what happened with the trio of pitchers that we've talked about so much, where you had Justin Steele putting together by far his best start. It was one of the best starts of any Cubs pitcher this year when you really break it down. And he finally had all four pitches working for him in the same outing. Just really looked fantastic. And then you had Keegan Thompson, before he was once again put back on the IL with the shoulder inflammation, he had his best outing, you know, coming out of the rotation, where he went from not being able to miss any bats to suddenly missing, like, what did he get, like 14 whiffs out of 70 pitches? It was something crazy. And I was so pissed that he was not able to make then that final appearance, because I wanted to see, like, oh, did they figure something out, or was that just a fluke? And then finally you had Adbert Alzolay coming out of the bullpen after his injury, which was about innings management, and he was making these multi-inning appearances, but his numbers were insane for his last like 8 appearances. He was just ridiculous. And so I'm not saying that changed my perspective on how the Cubs should proceed with respect to the rotation this offseason. I still agree with everything that we've said about, you know, really wanting 2 surefire additions, another 2 good competitive additions, and then you sort of figure out what you have in spring training. But I found it heartening, and I find myself trying not to take too much away from it, but it was a nice note to finish on to think, okay, yeah, I now remember why we think that the Cubs certainly have at least 3 contributors in these guys. And I feel that tension of not taking too much away from a final few appearances at the end of a lost season.
Here's what I'll say about that. These guys are major league pitchers. All three of them can get out regardless of the hitter. It can be, you know, Bryce Harper up there or, you know, the 26th man on a roster. These guys, I trust that they can I trust them in big situations. I don't know if any of them is a consistent 6-7 inning guy. I don't know that. I wouldn't bet on it. Right now, I'd lean Justin Steele, but that's recency bias. You know, if how many starts into his career is he? 5, 6?
7.
How many starts? 7 starts into the season. What were we saying about Adbert Alzolay? That gives me pause to say that any of these guys are long-term starters. With all that said, I'm not sure if it matters. Every single time we've talked about starting pitching and stuff like that with David Ross, he's not some old school guy that immediately says, I have to have 5 guys that can go 7, 8, 9 innings. He's not thinking,
need my horses.
He wants guys like that, sure, but he's not lost in today's game. He's not unaware of how that there are different ways to win. So, and I've been hesitant to go this route or even accept it. I want more 7, 8, 9 inning guys because that's more fun to watch, in my opinion. I like seeing that. But that doesn't mean it's the only way to win. If I had to pick a team right now to win the World Series, it's the Rays, and they're going to do it the way they've won games is in a very different fashion than what, you know, traditionalists are used to, what I grew up watching. And it works. So can these guys be a part of a rotation, quote unquote, you know, something, a pitching staff, a bullpen that eats multiple innings a game and gets you through a season? Can they go 3-4 innings a start and then, you know, Steele goes 4 innings and Alzolay goes 5, vice versa, whatever it is. How can you make that work? How do you balance that over the course of a season? Is that possible? I don't know. I don't know if Ross is capable of doing that, if these pitchers are capable of doing that, but I think it's something interesting that's been added to the mix. I was really encouraged by Keegan Thompson's last outing. I talked to him about that. There were mechanical issues and confidence issues. Mechanical issues led to the command issues, which led to confidence issues, which led to the injuries, right? All of that was mixed together, right? I think he was trying to correct things that he couldn't correct, and that was throwing him off his game, and that led to the issues that we saw. Now, my question is, is he doing something right now that is leading to the shoulder barking? We have to, you know, health is going to be something huge with these guys, all of them, everybody, right? That's something you have to keep in the back of your mind with all of these guys. But those are 3 arms that can give you multiple innings a game. How many times a week they can do that is my question. But they really add an interesting dynamic to the Cubs that, if you're willing to think outside of the traditional mindset of what a starter is or what a pitching rotation is, it suddenly gets a lot more interesting, and how you attack the offseason doesn't have to be so simple. I agree with what Brett said before. I'm sticking to what we've already said. They need to get 4 or 5 starters this offseason, 2 of whom have to be no doubt in the rotation, and you move forward. But how you fill out those innings, how you get through a season is going to be interesting. And maybe they can find a path, a unique path, you know, an outside the box path that gets them to be a good pitching staff and a good, a strong unit. It'll be interesting to see, because I do like those guys a lot, and there's talent in the bullpen, and you get some surprise guys, which they've been capable of doing. You can put together a 13 man staff that you know gets you through a season and is not your weakness like it was this year.
I mean, when was the last time the Cubs had 1 homegrown pitcher on their pitching staff acquired either through the draft or the international market that you could count on. I mean, certainly no one who signed after Theo Epstein was hired, at least until this year. And the Cubs have three useful pitchers, and that's significant, particularly given the enormous holes on the rest of the roster. I'm just curious how this is going to work, like, next April, and the Cubs lose three games in a row. Like, I want to see how these guys respond, and I'm really wondering who's going to be kind of like the stoppers in the room or the guy. And I know there were times with Rizzo, after a while it was like, okay, dude, we get it, it's baseball, this happens. And there were times where, you know, Theo wanted to, like, you know, break stuff in the clubhouse to, like, get them to show urgency, yada yada yada. But, like, it's great that these guys showed stuff in August and September. And to be fair, Alzolay had great moments in the first half of the season. So did Steele. Thompson earned Ross's trust when the Cubs were still in a competitive mode. But, like, I think this is where Jed and Ross really have to identify some, like, proven commodities, and not to have, like, everyone who was happy at the end of the year, like, and, you know, pulling on the positives, and to have some sort of, like, just structure to navigate a full season. Because, you know, whatever the Cubs do, like, they're going to talk themselves into, hey, we can compete if this happens, if that happens. And then, like, they're going to lose on opening day by, like, 10 runs. It's going to be like, the sky is falling. Like, we've all seen this. And so, like, how are they going to kind of, like, keep it together next year and, like, build off of this? Obviously, we've been talking about for months, is, like, the kind of most fascinating thing here.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
All right, so as I mentioned at the top, it is the postseason time, it's playoffs, and the Cubs are not involved, which is, what, so 1 year out of the last six that the Cubs have not been involved, 2019, and obviously they were, like, strictly speaking, they were involved in 2018 for about a minute, and 2020 for about 2 minutes, and I gotta say, yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah, that 20, I'm sure it's just that, like, you know, you convince yourself of some truth, but I would swear on Bible right now that when that 2020 postseason started after the pandemic season, I knew the Cubs were getting wiped away immediately. I mean, I just knew. I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was because I was like, uh-oh, if the Cubs actually do make a run and sort of put something together and go to the World Series this year, will a part of me always look back in history and be like, well, it was kind of fake, though. It wasn't really real. I'd rather they won a real season. All the jokes that people make about the Dodgers now. So I don't know. I might just be, like, ex post factoing that into my head. But, like, I would swear to you, I knew the season was over. Oh, they won the division. Hooray. Okay, the year's over. Let's get, you know, on to the next year. Well, that was this year, and obviously, it had its own issues, and the Cubs are not involved in the playoffs, but the playoffs are happening, nevertheless. Amazing. They go on, even without the Cubs. So I'm curious your guys' thoughts. Todd had mentioned, you know, that the Rays are, you know, potentially his pick to go, but is there anything about this postseason, storylines, games, matchups, whatever, that you find particularly captivating, that's something that you're looking forward to seeing play out?
Yeah, I think the Giants are interesting because you know, I've talked about this on the podcast before, but I'm utterly fascinated by how they put that team together and how they're winning. And David Ross said this as well. He's pretty interested in that too. Now, does it work in the postseason? Can you make this work?
Can I slip in on that real quick, just because I saw it, and I apologies to whoever put this out there because I don't recall, but I saw a stat. It was something like, in the history of baseball, there have been maybe like 16 teams that have won 107 games, and all but one at least went to the World Series. It was that 2001 Mariners team.
Right, right.
Man, which set the record. But every single one, except one, went to the World Series at least. And so that, I was like, whoa.
What about 106 win teams? Isn't that what the Dodgers are?
Yeah, but that's the, I know, that's the funny thing. No, they're all terrible. Interestingly enough, every single team, I believe I saw this. There have been 25 teams in baseball history that have won at least, have won 106 games. Exactly.
Exactly.
And all of them washed out. In fact, four of them, incredibly, were dismissed from the postseason before the games even started. Yeah, they're like, you know what? You didn't win 107. Get out of here.
It'll just go. Yeah, that's really interesting, because I don't have them going to the World Series in my own, you know, fantasy world of picks that I made. Not that those matter in the least. But yeah, that team's going to be interesting. I think I'm going to follow the Brewers because, I mean, also people that listen to the podcast know how I've been like,
how big a fan you are of the Brewers.
Like every single time I'm just like, no, they can't do anything. And then they go and make the playoffs and somehow, you know, Craig Counsell gets his team to play so much better than the names on the lineup actually look. But I think this is the year that they make a run. I really do. They just, that pitching is so good. Even without Devin Williams, I really like that team. So I'm curious to see how they do. I mean, there's just a lot of different brands of baseball, right? Like, I think you can look at it through a Cubs lens, and right, and there's that Theo quote where it's like, what's the next trend? Whoever wins is the next trend. We're all going to be talking about that's the way to win. But I think what I find fascinating is there's so many different ways that these teams have been put together. So there's so many different ways to put a winning team out on the field. So when you say like, the Cubs have to do this, the Cubs have to do this. No, no, no. They need to figure out what works for them and what their path is. What path are they going to take is what we need to figure out, right? And I think we can watch these playoffs and see that, hey, there's a lot of different ways the Cubs can end up making this work out. I'm curious what route they will attempt to take and if it'll work. There's a lot of pieces out on The Athletic. I read James's, like, how the team was put together. And I find that fascinating. How the White Sox were put together, how all these teams are put together is something I would recommend fans read. If you're curious to see how the Cubs can put a winner together again.
Brett, you know, I'm all about that content and I'm just totally absorbed in self-interest, so whatever is the best like trolling Cubs angle, like if Schwarber just hits like 8 home runs in the playoffs.
I knew you were gonna say that. I knew it.
Game 7 of the World Series, like Dylan Cease starts it, Eloy hits like 2 bombs, and then Kimbrel closing it out, something like that. Like that, we need that, like poetry, or like to Sahada's point of like that Theo quote of, you know, everyone's just going to be writing stories about copying how they won the World Series. And then you go out and give Ben Zobrist $56 million after he kills it in the playoffs for the Royals. So front offices do that too. Like they're watching just the same way everyone else is and be like, I wonder if that would work, you know?
I'll take a similar tack, albeit less from an intentional trolley perspective, more from a fan service perspective. Of course you want to see Schwarber versus Rizzo. See, the rest of the baseball world is talking about a historic matchup, Red Sox, Yankees, the rivalry. No, for me, it's Rizzo versus Schwarber. I want to see, you know, what they do in that game. And obviously by virtue of having talented players that they scattered to the winds, the Cubs have a number of former players in the postseason this year. That'll be fun to follow. But certainly this week, I will be, of course, engrossed by the Cardinals-Dodgers matchup in the wild card game in the National League. If not only because, you know, of course, I've got to root against the Cardinals. I can't stand by and let that happen, even though I sort of hate the Dodgers as well. But what I find fascinating is the matchup of this, like, barely snuck in wild card team, the Cardinals, that got hot, that were left for dead in mid-July, and then this Dodgers team that missed out on having the best record in baseball by like a game, and now they have to play a one gamer, and so it's a little bit of win-win for me, because if the Dodgers win, it's like, ha-ha, screw you Cardinals. But if the Cardinals win, it's sort of like, ho-ho, 106 wins didn't get you shit. See, I told you all those 106 win teams got bounced. So that'll be fun. And then I think that that White Sox-Astros series could prove a little fun. I mean, you know, I think sometimes we overstate the managerial narratives that we can create, but it's a little fun. It's Tony La Russa against Dusty Baker. That's kind of fun. I will admit it.
Yeah, I almost forgot about that. I was thinking about that the other day. There's a Cubs link there, right? I mean, they went at it, Cubs Cardinals. What, like, early on, during Dusty's tenure, didn't he really get into it with La Russa, like, quite a bit?
Oh yeah,
I don't know if there's actual bad blood between them or if that was just like a Dusty, I mean, Cubs Cardinals thing, but. At least I haven't seen that storyline pop up, but I think that's something that that is kind of being overlooked. The Dusty versus TLR.
You want to see them fight, don't you?
Just go at it, yeah.
Just go at it. Charge each other. It's like instead of it was Zimmer, right, charging Pedro Martinez.
Yeah.
Instead of one Don Zimmer charging Pedro, it's like two Don Zimmers charging each other, and let's see what happens when they collide. Eventually, takes a while for them to reach each other, but eventually, when they get to each other, some drama ensues.
Yeah.
I mean, it does get old when like. The camera is just constantly cutting to the dugout and just watching managers like stare and spit and like scratch their heads. But like, I don't know, these two managers, like you could, I mean, I'm thinking back to that game 5 in Washington with Dusty. Obviously we know a couple of playoff games with the Cubs, like, I don't know, crazy stuff seems to happen around Dusty's teams in the playoffs. And La Russa this year, I think pretty much everyone on this podcast could have managed the White Sox to a playoff berth. I mean, it was kind of a ready-made team. And like, this is where La Russa is supposed to make his money. And this has been a year where, even if you didn't follow the White Sox closely, there were lots of these things that just kept popping up of like, what's TLR doing now? Like, what's the, you know, latest thing we can kind of skim over because the division is so bad and the roster is so good, and that, you know, it always comes back to the players, but like in the playoffs, these two teams, I mean, we haven't even mentioned, you know, the Astros being like the most hated organization in baseball, even though that's not Dusty's fault, you know, post trash can, like, it's going to be a good series, and it's kind of, you know, because it's not the Yankees or Red Sox. It won't be like in
right,
the
right.
full prime time, full blast window. But I don't know. I think that'll be a really entertaining one with stuff that you'll walk away being like, what just happened? Because, I mean, Todd, if you were there in D.C., that game 5, I mean, that was just like bizarre.
That was a what just happened game. Yes.
And then Dusty got 100%. Fired after winning what, like 95 games?
Yeah. Just. Wild. The whole thing was wild. So I was just talking to someone about that, and I was like, I honestly can't remember what happened, but you know, I know it was exciting, but I can't, don't ask, outside of Wade Davis like getting the last out and celebrating, don't ask me anything about what happened. It's all a blur.
Well, I gotta slide in with a couple. You got the Jose Lobaton getting picked off at first base in the back for what on earth are you thinking, my large dude? Although, by the way, 1 of 69 for the Cubs this year. There's another one who forgot. And then also, obviously, the 5 runs off of Max Scherzer, that the Cubs, the ill-gotten runs, because as you may or may not recall, there was that interference play with Javi on his backswing where he hit Matt Wieters. And then a month later, MLB admitted, they're like, yeah, we got that wrong. And so, you know, butterfly wings, they shouldn't have gotten those runs in that inning. And who knows?
And they were in a funk offensively. I remember Rizzo hit the walk-off It was basically a bloop single and screamed respect bloop, me after respect blooping me. A single. and I don't think, I think he's, like, honestly, I looked this up. Since he screamed that, he has two hits in the postseason. I think it's like an 045, 100, 045 slash line. Not that many games, right? Maybe like 20, 30 plate appearances. But yeah, it's been a rough go of Rizzo. So we got to see what he does tomorrow night, right? Is AL or no, tonight? Tonight's AL. Tonight is AL.
Jeez,
yeah. So
that was the last good postseason thing.
It was the last
Cubs,
good.
Right?
Yep. Yeah. That game five was the last.
Wow.
Good moment. Unless you want to take
4 years.
Down 3-0 to the Dodgers and they win a game. But I don't know if I'd pull that from that one. But there's that was the last good moment. I was thinking the same thing.
this might be recency bias because I don't know if the Cubs actually popped champagne in 2018 because they were waiting on the division before the wild card. And then obviously last year we were not a part of that. But the clubhouse in D.C. after they won, the game is kind of a blur, but I will never forget just the amount of cigar smoke and drunkenness was like they had just won the World Series. And anyone who watched John Lester's interview on live TV can get a sense of that. Just gross. Just the amount of like just booze and cigar smoke and just a team just totally like you just walked out of there like that was an amazing series. It was a great accomplishment to win the division and win a playoff round. There's no way that they're flying to Dodger Stadium, which included like a stopover in New Mexico or something like that. Yes. There's no way they're winning the next round. Like they're going to be absolutely exhausted after that second half of the season. And that's exactly what happened losing the first three games.
And the bullpen. I mean, it was really, the bullpen was just so decimated at that point. Like Joe had to go to John Lackey in like a critical situation. Just like a terrible he had nobody to go to. It was just like
that's the story.
Right. Yeah. I mean
he had no other options.
Yeah. He could have gone to exhausted Wade Davis or something like that. I don't know.
Guy. Michael Key, I feel bad. Michael keeps trying to slip in. I keep saying his mute. Our producer Michael is like, we just keep riffing, and he's like, but I want to say something. I got something.
Are you guys interested in the actual performance of exact 106 win teams in the playoffs?
My gosh, what a way to wrap this show. Yes.
So five teams.
This is the reality.
Five teams before the 2021 Dodgers have won exactly 106 games. You have two World Series champions, 1939 Yankees and the 1942 Cardinals. Two losers, the 98 Braves, lost the NLCS to the Padres after beating the Cubs in the first round. That great Sammy Sosa, Kerry Wood Cubs team in 98. Yes. And then the 2019 Dodgers lost to the Nationals in the first round. And then the fifth one, 1904 New York Giants. The New York Giants owner refused to play in the World Series because he looked down on the American League as an inferior league. So there was no World Series.
Oh my gosh! So wait a minute. I have a couple reactions
That's
to that
the
one.
Greatest thing ever.
I was, you know, I joked, you know, rewind the tape. I joked like, oh, how one of them, you know, some of them didn't even play, but it's actually true.
It's true.
One of them didn't
true.
Even
one
play.
Of them
I can't believe
play.
That's a thing. How did I not know about that? Oh, he looked down upon the American League.
Wait a minute. I mean, I feel like we're breaking some. I mean, I don't know if you can call it breaking news when it's from 115 years ago, but.
Here you go.
You're
wait, I'll read this. A, yeah, front. This
there
is
was
from,
no World Series.
Yeah,
that
this
year?
Is front. So there was the first modern World Series was in 1903, and then 1904, the New York Giants won the NL, the Boston Americans won the AL, and this is from Wikipedia. With no formal arrangement in place between the two leagues regarding the staging of the World Series, the Giants under owner John T. Brush refused to play against a team from what they considered an inferior league. The resulting criticism from fans and writers caused Brush to reverse course during the offseason and lead the effort to formalize the World Series between the two leagues.
Wow.
There
this
you go.
This is amazing. Admittedly, there are a couple listeners right now that are like banging their table like, I knew that. You don't know your World Series history. I was there. But I think for the most of us, This yeah. is I am fascinated by this. I did not know this, and the rest of you listeners, you honest ones, you did not know that you were coming into this episode of On to Waveland and going to learn some fascinating World Series trivia history. So, boom, there you go. Thank you, Michael. That was totally worth sliding in. I thought maybe he had something that he wanted to share about like that National Series, and we kept aping it. Like he's like, "Well, I wanted to mention the Lobaton pickoff. God damn it, Brett, he took it from me." No, but you had something much better to share with us. So thank you to Michael.
And happy to jump in.
Thank you. Yeah, you rocked that. So thank you to Michael. Thank you to Sahadev, Patrick. Make sure you're getting their stuff at The Athletic. It'll be, you know, the postseason is going on. So there's some great stuff at The Athletic to check out that's postseason related. But it also means we're going to be getting the, after the season stuff coming in, both at an evaluative level. There's some great stuff there, but then also we'll be getting word from Jed Hoyer. He'll be doing his first, debrief on the season. The Theo Epstein ones were famous. So I wonder how Jed will be able to handle an hour under the hot lights of Zoom. So check that out. I'm Brett Taylor. You can get my stuff at Bleacher Nation, and we will be back at you later this week to discuss some more of that, after the season breakdown stuff from Jed Hoyer et al. And, we appreciate you. We'll be with you this off season. Our recording schedule will shrink a bit, but you will be hearing from us. So keep us in those feeds and make sure you are otherwise subscribing wherever you get your podcasts. So thank you very much. This is On to Waveland. We'll be back at you soon. Take care.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.